on my end. Cool, cool. I like your shirt. I like that color.
Oh, thanks. It's like a weird paisley Star Wars thing going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little Darth Vader action.
Yeah. Oh, and I was going through your Amazon store.
Oh, yeah.
I found some folding little t-shirt things.
Mm-hmm.
Have you used those with your kids? Is that what you used them for?
So the little, you're talking about the little plastic doohickey? Mm-hmm. We use that for the business.
Really?
Yeah. So when we get the shirts from the printer, mm-hmm. anytime we get our shirts done, they just come in a big pile in like bags and boxes.
Yep.
And they all need to be folded for shipping. So that thing is fantastic in terms of just getting them into a nice crisp square that goes into a little poly bag, and then we could ship them out.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I appreciate your optimism that my kids actually fold their laundry.
Yeah.
Very nice of you.
Well, I saw that and I'm like, because I'm trying to get the kids involved a little bit more.
Of course.
I'm hoping by the time they're in middle school and high school, they just do it automatically. But
yeah. I will say that is one thing that has been helpful when we do have a t-shirt order or we do some kind of pre-order and there's just like hundreds of shirts to ship. That's a job that I've given to my son that he does. And we give him a few bucks for helping out.
Absolutely.
But he will sit there and it's just systematic. It's like boom, 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 done. And he just goes through all the shirts in like a couple of hours. So and it is good for kids.
Sweet. And then I hope you dress up like Uncle Sam and come in there and take like 80% of what he just earned. And
yes, thank you very much, young man. If we're going to do this, we're going to do it right.
Yes. All right. Well, guys, so Mark and I were talking, and I have a lot of questions about the Primo, which is a ceramic style, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's an inch thick ceramic, which is kind of like the common amount. If you talk to about Big Green Egg or any other brand, it's going to be about an inch thick.
Yeah, and so I want to get better at using it, and I've got some things opening up here in the future that it would be very nice for me to jumpstart my knowledge to it. So I thought, well, if I'm going to ask all these questions, what better way to record it? Because chances are other people with less experience or not much like I have would love some answers. So real quick, how long have you had you have a Primo, correct?
Yeah, I've got a Primo. I believe I got it when we had first moved to our new house in Arizona. It's pre-Mateo, and Mateo's 11 now. So I would probably say maybe 12 years, something like that.
PM. Pre-Mateo. Yeah. Yeah, got it.
Pre-Mateo, exactly. Pre all the gray hair as well.
Yeah. It's weird as you get older, you have to do that with kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely serve as like a timeline divider, things that were before. We were talking about this, Nicole and I were talking about business stuff, pre-kids and how different things were trying to do this, you know, like interviews and things like that. Was just so much easier when there weren't kids around, but you know, wouldn't trade them for the world, but they changed things for sure.
My sister's about ready to have her first one. And I said, well, are you and your husband ready for the easiest kid you'll ever have? Cause it's just one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. So yeah, it's been a long time. I think when we talked about our histories here, I talked about my first smoker was just a cheap offset. And then the more research I did, I started to hear about Big Green Egg. And then I got into Primo because it was kind of like the alternative to Big Green Egg. Big Green Egg always had round Kamados, just standard round shapes. Mm-hmm. And Primo was kind of considered, in the woodworking terms, they were kind of the Powermatic at the time. If you saw, you know, the other brands, they were the one that was like the next level up. I don't know that Powermatic is still held in that kind of regard anymore, but maybe it's a bad analogy. Anyway, the other thing I liked about the Primo is I've said this many times, I like ribs and I like making ribs. And that was my obsession initially. And the shape of the Oval XL. Now, Primo does make smaller round models, but the Oval XL was kind of like their flagship unit. And it's like perfectly shaped for a bunch of racks of ribs. So if you get one of those rib, like standing independent rib racks, you could get like five on there. You could have easily, with plenty of room to spare, you could have like five racks of ribs going at once on that thing. So that was kind of what initially attracted me to it.
Which is a lot more than you would think just looking at it. I mean, square footage or square inch wise, it's not, I mean, it's not huge, but it's not small either. Especially when you, I think I did chicken on Saturday and I think I had like 8 or 10 leg quarters on there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And especially if you think vertically, if you're just thinking horizontally and in one plane, you don't have a ton of cooking. I mean, it's plenty for a normal family, but if you're really trying to batch out a bunch of food, you might find it limiting. But if you go vertical and they have different tiered stacking systems where you can actually have multiple layers on this thing and also then different heat zones at the same time, it becomes incredibly versatile. But it is definitely going to be something that's a little bit trickier. Hold on a second. I got a little error in GarageBand. So I think I was just saying about the different tiered cooking methods that you have provides you with a lot of different cooking zones, cooking options, and then, of course, more real estate.
Yep. Well, don't jump the gun, because that is one of the questions.
Sweet.
All right. So before we just dive into the actual ceramic, I did have a question. You also have a Weber kettle, correct?
Yes.
Which is that direct heat underneath, typically with charcoal. Same kind of concept in a way, correct? So how do those two differ? Because I know price point wise, it's a pretty big difference.
So now we're talking about traditional Weber kettle, right? Yep. We're not talking about the Summit Kamado.
Correct.
Just making sure.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Your standard entry, more entry level, but a lot of people have success with it too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, a couple differences. The charcoal in a standard kettle is going to be a lot closer to your grates. So you just have physical distance. That's a major factor. It's harder to get away from the coals. So when you're doing things like an indirect cook on a Weber kettle, you usually have to kind of bank your stuff to the two sides or to one side and put your meat on the other side and just kind of get that convection going across. It's a little bit harder. What you have that's advantageous in something like the Primo is distance, right? So of course it's still, you know, even if you're right over the coals, putting them 12 inches away is a big difference than 6 inches away.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. You also have the ability to subdivide your charcoal in the bottom to kind of create these zones as well. So you can kind of have all of your fuel on one side, meat on the other. Basically, I think if you have the kettle, if you have experience trying to smoke and cook indirect on the kettle, that knowledge will serve you well because there are a lot of commonalities there. It's just whatever the kettle does, I honestly think the Primo, in almost every way, is going to do it better, with the exception of cleanup. And we could talk about that later, too, if we want to get a little bit deeper into things like that.
Yeah, that's another one of the questions.
But I definitely think in terms of the cooking, very similar. You also have the fuel efficiency that comes with the Kamado, where you might have to refuel or put, you know, a whole nother chimney starter of fuel into something like a kettle on a long cook. You're not necessarily going to have to do that on a Kamado because it's so insulated, so fuel efficient, and you don't have to have as many live coals lit as you might in something that isn't quite as fuel efficient and well insulated. So it's just really learning to put the brakes on a little bit. Things you might have had to really get a lot of extra heat on a kettle, you're not necessarily going to have to do that on the Kamado. It's a less is more sort of mentality.
Now, when you say Kamado, you mean the ceramic, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Kamado, generally speaking, when we talk about our ceramic grills, so just to name a few brands that people might have heard of, Primo certainly is one of them. Big Green Egg might be the one to credit for popularizing it as much as it has become popular, at least in the States and maybe Canada. But then also Kamado Joe is a brand that kind of started as sort of like a third tier brand, but now they're kind of top tier. They basically saw what Primo and Big Green Egg were doing and did it better. And they figured, you know what? People are asking for accessories. These companies won't make the accessories. We'll make the accessories. So they have come up with a lot of better designs. If I were buying a Kamado today, it would actually be a Kamado Joe. I love their lineup. Everything is good, but there is no good reason for me to replace my Primo at this point. It would be too much of a lateral move, so I won't be doing that. But Kamado Joe is one of the better ones. But there's a whole bunch of other ones. You can find cheaper Chinese-made ones. You might go to Costco or the home center. You might see a brand you've never seen before. There's a brand called, I think it's Acorn.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so there's that one.
Yeah, it's by Charbroil.
Yep, and then there is the Kamado.
Yeah, that's where it's like, is it a dragon? Is it?
Yeah, exactly. And it is expensive. I think we did mention that on one show in the past. That is the one that looks like it's tiled on the outside, like bathroom tile. And it's incredibly gaudy, but they are supposed to be like top-notch, top-tier quality, but they look a little different. But again, I think they're made to look like a lizard or a Kamado. I'm saying Kamado what is it? Komodo.
Yeah.
The word gets screwed up when you keep saying the wrong way. But Komodo dragons, I think it's supposed to invoke the look of a lizard, and it's just incredibly expensive.
So scaly looking.
Yeah, exactly. So a bunch of different brands out there, regardless, they all kind of performance-wise will kind of, you should have the same expectations with most of them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, kind of going back what you were saying in comparison to the kettle, if you have just regular charcoal grill experience, you've got certain things that are going to help you, but in a lot of ways, you're still ignorant, and I don't like using that word, but in this case, it makes sense. Ignorant in the ways of how it actually cooks and how it is the most fuel efficient, just from what I've noticed. I mean, the more oxygen you add to it, it's just a different way of cooking.
Yeah, I mean, the principles are the same, right? We've got lit charcoals, we've got an exhaust, and you have an intake. And it's all the same things on a Kamado.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when you have a cook chamber that holds in as much heat and moisture as this does, it changes the game in a lot of ways. And the types of fuel that you can use in there, the fuel efficiency overall, the amount of heat output that you get from that fuel, how long it lasts and before you have to replace it, how many wood chunks you need with a more closed environment like that. I think, like I said before, I think it does give you the principles that you would need, but you definitely need to go in like knowing that you're going to have a little bit of a learning curve to adjust to how this thing works.
Yeah,
for sure.
And so my very first question then is, how do I get it started? I know how I do it, but I don't know if that's like the best way, because I haven't had consistent outcome. So can you walk me through your process from it being cold to getting it started and ready for whatever temp you want to set it to?
Yeah. So for me, it really depends. It's so versatile. There are different ways to do it, right? And there is no one right way. You ask 10 different barbecuers and you might get 10 different answers. So one of the easiest sort of like no frills, you don't have to think too hard way is to simply put charcoal in there and get something to start them. So you get a little starter cube, put some pieces on top, let it go for a little bit of time until you start to see a little bit of white ashing over there. Now it's lit, and now you can kind of close the lid, set your intake and your exhaust and your damper, get everything set the way you want it, and just let it go and just watch the temp until you get to the point that, you know, I usually run my top, for the most part, wide open.
Okay.
The bottom is only wide open during the lighting phase or when I want to make a blazing inferno, which you certainly can do. But then I usually choke that thing down to maybe 3/4 of an inch, sometimes even less than that, especially if we're just talking about smoking temperatures. But a lot of times it's like once I get to the temp I want, I'll choke it down pretty low and then it just kind of stays rock solid at that temperature. But you'll get the hang of it. And it's like, the hockey analogy where you want to go where the puck is moving and not where the puck currently is.
Yep.
So you have to think in terms of, okay, I made that slight adjustment. Do not expect it to do anything.
Yeah.
Make that slight adjustment. Go do something else for 5 or 10 minutes and then come back and see where it is. And then you can kind of make your changes as you go.
I think I know one of my mistakes then. So I was if I wanted to, what in my mind, level it out, I would have just barely any opening at the bottom, and I would have just barely any holes showing at the top too. So but then I noticed that my temperature, it looked like it was maintaining, but it was gradually going down.
It may have been maintaining for a short period of time, but that setup, without a doubt, at least on my cooker, that's going to send me down.
Yeah.
That's a way you want, that's on your way to choking it off to completely stop the cook that day.
Yep.
That is one way to do it, but generally, I think the way I do it most often is going to be with a chimney starter. I find that way slower. So if you do a little, let me go back one more. If you use a little, starter, tumbleweed, whatever it is, you get everything going that way, it's fine, but it's a little bit slower. That's for like a Saturday.
Yeah.
That's when I've got the luxury of time. I'm sitting out there with a drink, having a good time. I don't want to rush it. The second way to make things a little bit faster, but the same idea, I've got a torch. And there are all kinds of devices you can use that do something similar, but I will just take my little propane torch and sit on top of the charcoal for a few minutes. and then I'll move to another section. And how many parts, because it's a pretty big bed of charcoal, mm-hmm. the number of parts I light is kind of consistent with how hot I want to go. If I'm doing steaks and I wanted to go, you know, real hot and fast, I'll light a whole bunch of spots. If I'm mm-hmm. only smoking, I might only light one spot. So that's the second variety or second variation of how I would do this. The other one, and the one I do most commonly, is the chimney starter. So I may have some charcoal in there already just from the last cook. That's another thing to get used to between a Kamado and a kettle. You will have charcoal left over if you have a decent amount in there in the first place. I know on my kettle, it's like 99% of the time when it's done and I shut it down, I come back and it's just gone. It's just dust,
yeah.
You know, the next day. So in this one, you may still have charcoal in there. Not a bad idea to put a little bit of charcoal in there before this, but I have my chimney starter ready to go. I let that thing go until it's ashed over. These are now blazing hot, and I will drop that in and then start. Now that's going to be tricky to keep the temp down, because as soon as it starts to warm up the chamber, that much lit charcoal, it's going to be a little bit difficult to say, no, I want to stay at 250, you know? So that's why you got to be careful with how much you put in there.
Yeah.
So I may not do a full chimney starter if I'm trying to do a smoking cook, just a regular smoking, anywhere from 225 to 275. I'm just going to have, I actually have two chimney starters. I have one that's like a little mini Weber, and then I have one that's like the full size. I'll just take one of the little mini ones, and I won't wait like 15 minutes. I'll wait maybe 8 minutes, 9 minutes, just to the point where I know it's well lit, but the whole thing is not completely ashed over. And then I dump that in on top. To me, that just fast forwards it. Those lit coals now, if I control the airflow properly, will slowly work their way down and light the rest of the coals for as long as I want that cook to go.
Yep.
And that usually allows me to kind of play with the temperature. But you just got to be careful with that thing, because a Kamado is a runaway train if you're not careful. And if everything gets lit and everything is firing on all cylinders, good luck getting the temperature down. Mm-hmm. It's always easy to go up on a Kamado. It's not so easy to go back down. That's the one thing you got to be careful of.
Like trying to shut down a party when everybody's lit.
Word. That's yeah. what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, man, it really is so much fun to use. And I've learned something from it every single time.
Yeah.
So with mine, it's got the two top grates that you put the meat on.
Mm-hmm.
And then underneath it, I've got these ceramic plates. Mm-hmm. And I believe those are for smoking as well, mm-hmm. correct?
They're for smoking, a.k.a. indirect. So even okay. if you're not doing something smoking, you can do a high temp indirect. Sometimes I'll do a roasted chicken in that mm-hmm. way. So I might have their technical term, I guess, is deflector plates.
Yeah.
You'll have the half moon deflector plate under the chicken on one side, and then I have all my hot coals on the other side. So that the heat kind of comes up and over okay. on top of the chicken, helping me crisp that skin, but then also the deflector plate on the bottom is keeping that direct heat from actually hitting the chicken. Yeah. I don't necessarily want to burn it, right? So you can use the deflector plates not just for smoking. In the case of smoking, you would just have both deflector plates, your fuel underneath, and then the whole thing is just becoming a smoke chamber.
Mm-hmm. And I've done that quite a few times, and I would say that's probably my favorite way of mm-hmm. doing it. Just because you feel like you're grilling and you're yeah. smoking and
yep.
it's all of the different things. So,
well, and I will say the deflector plates is one of the design things I don't love. And maybe some of the other brands, like if anyone's figured out a better way to do this, it's probably Kamado Joe, but I don't know for sure that they have. But one of the things that used to drive me nuts about it is if I do want to add more wood, smoking wood. So the charcoals are going, I want to throw another little lump of cherry in there. Getting everything out and getting access to the fire at that point is really difficult, because you literally will have to take the meat off, then you get your grates off, then you remove one of the deflector plates, put your wood in, and now reassemble the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's kind of good that it is less is more. You very rarely have to add a lot more wood, but there may be at least one point on a longer cook you're probably going to want to go in there. It's just a pain in the butt. It's not that like a deal breaker, but be aware you will be disassembling this thing just to get a chunk of wood in there and then put everything back.
Yep. That was one of my questions. So there is, okay. as far as you know, there is no other way around it other than remove, enter your yep. new stuff, and then, okay.
The only other way around it is to either use pieces that are so small that they could slip past the openings,
mm-hmm.
which is not ideal. You want something a little bit more substantial in there, or to build your charcoal, you know, stack in such a way that maybe you have a couple of these pieces just kind of buried in there. Gotcha. So as the fire starts to burn down, it'll eventually get to one of those other chunks of wood, and you only start with one. But by the time that one's burnt out, then it's going to find one of the other ones. So you can kind of plan a longer cook like that and still never have to actually take it apart.
Yeah. Cool. So now this is a very Primo specific question, but the grates on the Primo, because it is that oval shape, it has 3 feet on them, correct?
Yep.
And I think I've seen people like somehow have them stand vertically, or where do you put them when you need to take them out? Is there a way to stand them up, or do they sit on the edge, or...
I put them on the side. I've never seen anything that allows them to, like, especially if they're hot, to safely and conveniently be put elsewhere, like on the unit.
Yeah.
If there's a feature in there, that might be one I'm not familiar with.
Okay.
That would allow you to do that, because I've always just simply used, like, get a little grate lifter, one of those little things, little pinchy hoochies.
Yep.
Just shove that in there, pull it over, and then find a flat stone surface, preferably, that I could lay that hot grate down onto, and then just go about my business. But I don't know. I'd have to look into that. I don't think there's anything special with that. I think the shape of the feet on there is simply to just raise it up high enough so that you're flush with the outer rim, which is also one of the features I actually really like about it. People may disagree on this. Look at the other models. Some other types of Kamados may have a grate that's below that rim. And that can be good if you are the kind of person who lets your sausages and hot dogs walk off the grill. For me personally, I actually don't like having to go down into the smoker to do things. I really love the fact that the top of the cook surface is flush, so that when I open it, it's just all one flush surface.
Mm-hmm.
So again, could be just personal preference, but that's one of the things with the grates and why it has to sit up like that. Is they're trying to get outside of that little firebox, that protective internal box. They're sitting on top of that, and then they have to, I guess, go up high enough to get flush.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I guess I haven't thought of it about having to really get down in there to get something out.
And I think this is something that may have changed. I'd have to look at the current, like, Big Green Egg, but I know some of the older Big Green Eggs, when you look at it and you see someone cooking, you almost can't even see the food because it's, like, down in the chamber. Whereas on the Primo, you are literally right at that top surface.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So if I want to do a brisket, and let's say typically my briskets cook for 12 hours, let's just say, am I able to fill that thing up enough to get me through one entire cook? Let's say I don't have to add more wood, but will the charcoal and whatever I had added to beginning, will that go for 12 hours at the same temp once I get it regulated?
I think you should have no problem with that. With a full, you know, a full entire chamber of charcoal can last you so long. And I think it can be environmentally dependent. The temperature you're running, how hot it is outside, how much airflow you got going, humidity even, all factors in how long it can last. But I've absolutely heard of people going through full cooks. I've done multiple. See, what'll happen with me is I didn't do a lot of brisket, but I would do ribs. And I might be able to get 3 rib cooks done. And you know how those go. It's like 5 hours most of the time. 3 rib cooks off of the same load of charcoal. You know, and each time you just get the ash out of there and start over. And yeah, it starts to dwindle down toward the end. But it can be so fuel efficient that... having, like I said, I have to be honest, I haven't really done a brisket on a Kamado, but from things I've seen other people do, I don't think you're reloading that thing for a single brisket cook. I think you may even have some left over when you're done.
It's insane. It's still mind-boggling. Coming from an offset, a giant offset.
How much fuel you have to feed that thing, right?
Yes. Even double insulated and ones that have clamps for all the doors, and it just keeps everything in. It is insane.
Yep.
The difference. I mean, just incredible.
Yep. It is wild.
And you had kind of talked about the moisture before, and that is one thing that I absolutely have noticed, especially with chicken. The moisture that is in that chamber, like, it's like it just goes right into the meat. It is crazy.
The moisture is something that I think once you get used to that, and then you go to something else. And that's kind of how it worked with me. I went from an offset started working with a Kamado, and then later started to experiment a little bit more with like a traditional kettle and other types of smoking. And that was a bit of a, it was kind of a crutch, you know, because I saw it as something where, well, I mean, my stuff is always juicy. I never had a problem with that, right? Mm-hmm. And then you start thinking outside of that, you go, crap, now I got to think about water pans. Like, yeah. That's something people worry about. How do I add moisture back into this cook? And it's like, you just don't, on the way it works on a Kamado, if you don't keep opening that lid, you basically have this humid steam chamber mm-hmm. that happens naturally. And you could certainly add supplemental liquid as well. That's nothing wrong with that. And that's one of the good things about those deflector plates. If you get yourself, shallow, just containers, something that fits between the grate and that deflector plate. If you can get something in there, you could actually put liquids in that mm-hmm. and use it to not only catch drippings from the food, but also just to kind of help add even more steam to that chamber if you needed to.
Well, and I did notice this past weekend, I mean, I had it at about 300 degrees and it was pretty darn humid here in Ohio mm-hmm. this past weekend. But as I was opening it, not the heat that you're used to in Arizona, but like my hand and my arm got scorched from that moisture. I mean, that heat moisture that was just boom. I mean, it hits you like a wall.
Yeah. I just did a little Googling because I'm curious what other people are saying about this. This is referring to a bag of charcoal. So a standard large bag of charcoal. This website is estimating about 80 hours of cooking Whoa. Out of a large bag of charcoal.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not running it efficiently then.
And when placed in a large green egg, full thing can last up to 20 hours.
Oh, green egg, I tell you.
So all, again, doesn't matter the brand. Yeah. It's that ceramic that does the trick. It is. I mean, it's no joke and how long it can last. It's mind-boggling. You'll spend so much. You spend more on the cooker, but in the long run for fuel, you're going to spend less.
Correct. And just to put that in perspective, one big bag of lump charcoal I just got the other day was like between 15 and 20 bucks. Mm-hmm. And to pay for wood for the big smoker on a full day cook, you're looking at a truck bed full, depending on temperature outside.
Yeah. Yeah. Which the is thing's expensive. Just a monster eating that stuff.
Yep. So it's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is definitely more that set it and forget it type thing. You know, it's not quite what you get with like a pellet smoker, but you know, you do need to still pay attention to it. But once it's set, you kind of can, like once you gain confidence in your settings and you know, you could walk away, you just are slowly able to increase the time that you can walk away. And it is amazing. It is amazing for a live fire cooking method, what you can do with it.
Yep. So one of the questions is, what kind of fuel do I use? So obviously mm-hmm. charcoal is like the main star of the show. And then mm-hmm. like that's your base. And then you can add things to it, right?
Sure. Yep, so absolutely.
Other than just wood chunks, is there any other supplement that you could put in there?
Let's see. I mean, nothing different than what you might normally call alternatives for smoking. So things like certain shells, like pecan shells, or I don't know, you see people sometimes using shells as a mm-hmm. way to create smoke. So those things are all options for you. Anything that you would normally use somewhere else in some other type of smoking recipe is eligible to go inside that thing. But generally speaking, it's all about charcoal and then the occasional wood chunk. And speaking of that efficiency, you got one split, right? How many splits you go through on a regular smoker? Well, that one split can probably last you two or three cooks.
Oh, yeah.
depending on the amount of smoke you want, right? Mm-hmm. So this is one of those times with these where if you live in an area where you have access to good smoking wood, you've already got the offset, so you have plenty. But with Kamado cooking, that was one of the times where it suddenly made sense to like go to Home Depot and get a bag of chunks, which is something I used to think of as like, man, that's a really inefficient, wasteful, and expensive way to buy smoking wood. But if you really only need a small amount each time, that suddenly becomes like, well, yeah, it's expensive, but I won't have to buy any more for quite a while. And you're just using a chunk or two at a time. It works out great. So there is that. But I think we might want to talk a little bit about the charcoal itself. So one thing you'll hear people talk about with Kamados is almost exclusively a lot of people, they will only use hardwood lump charcoal and kind of look down upon you for using anything else. And I'm here to tell you, it's totally fine to use whatever charcoal you want. One of the number one rules is to not use any kind of starter fluid inside there. That's bad news. Ceramic is absorptive. It's going to absorb that chemical and probably hold on to that smell a lot longer than is ideal. So you definitely don't want that. And I still would avoid quick light type charcoals. Yeah. But I have no problem using briquettes inside my Kamado. It doesn't hurt anything. They just create more ash. Yeah, there's more binders in there as well. But it's, again, if you're just worried about it hurting something, it's not going to hurt anything. What I like about traditional briquettes is the fact that they're a little easier to control the heat. So hardwood lump is going to get a lot hotter. And I told you, in a Kamado, it can get out of control real fast. Mm-hmm. So that's something I'm always trying to keep in mind is what kind of cook am I doing? Do I have a relatively low temperature cook that, you know, hardwood lump may send me too far in the other direction and I have to babysit this thing a little bit more? Or can I get a really good quality natural briquette and drop those suckers in there knowing that the temp really isn't going to get carried away? It can only go so much with those briquettes in that kind of setup. And I've just found that I've had much more stable cooks, and I might even do a mix. I might start with a good base of the briquettes and then wind up using some hardwood lump later, especially if I see something with the temperature that I want to crank it up. Maybe at the end of the cook, I'm doing some kind of a reverse sear, mm-hmm. right? And I want to get something really, really hot at the end. Then I'm probably going to dump in a chimney of the hardwood lump on top of the base that's already there to get that temperature to spike up a little bit.
Yep.
So I have no problem using good quality briquettes as the basis for a smoking session.
So by adding that chimney, you've already lit the briquettes or the hardwood charcoal in that chimney, or you're just using that to dump in there and then it takes off from there?
Well, if I'm doing something like a reverse sear, it's time is of the essence, right? So I've already gotten to my temp. Now I'm ready to sear. I'm going to pull that thing off, let it rest for a couple of seconds. During that time, I will hopefully have already had my chimney ready to go. So I'm just going to take the grates up. I'm going to dump that thing back in there, put the grate back in place, close the lid, let it fire up, get up to that, you know, 600 degrees or whatever I want. And then I'm going to throw the meat back on for that final stage.
Gotcha.
Yeah. If you dump in the hardwood lump on top, it will maybe eventually you'll get that heat spike, but it's not going to be as fast as you would want it. Mm-hmm. And again, that's something I'm only going to do at the very end of the cook, because once I get up to that temp, you might come back to it like the next day and put your hand on it and still feel some heat. Like mm-hmm. it takes a while for those things to really come down.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, that efficiency is just bonkers. Yep. Mm-hmm. So I've noticed that there's is it felt that is on the rim of mm-hmm. the lid and the bottom, the base. Yep. Is that just, it's an adhesive felt? Is that what that is?
Sort of. It's a special material. It's a like a felt gasket.
Okay.
So you will find people who will upgrade that to a more substantial type of gasket that's kind of like a metal weave of some sort. Kamado Joe's, I believe, come with that more substantial one. Is it Rutland? Trying to think of the name of this one that everybody always seems to upgrade to. Hold on.
I think I've seen that name reading through stuff.
Gasket. Yeah, Rutland Gasket for Big Green Egg. So it's Rutland. Now, you can, of course, get regular gasket replacement material. What I have on my Primo, I did replace it once, and it was just the Primo gasket. I don't do much crazy stuff with it. People who are replacing gaskets are people who are doing clean burns and pizzas. Generally speaking, if you don't do those super, super high temp things, you're probably going to maybe replace that gasket in 10 years.
Okay.
It's just not something that should come up. Now, yours being an older unit or one that's been used, you do want to inspect it. Mm-hmm. The whole point of the gasket is to create a nice even seal all the way around, so there's no air gaps. You don't want to see any smoke coming out of the cracks. So replace the gasket if you need to. Upgrade to one of these, you know, Rutland ones if you want something that's a little bit fancier, but you certainly don't have to. But that is something that a lot of people do.
Gotcha. So a good way of inspecting that is if you do start to see air or smoke coming out of those, it might be time to look into doing some changing.
And it's forgivable if there's like a little bit. Sometimes your lid gets out of alignment with the base and you might have just like a little hairline crack at the end. But that's why I like, you know, these gaskets are there to take up any of that slack. So you just have the two soft materials coming together when you close it. So generally speaking, you shouldn't see a whole lot coming out of that. The only smoke and air you should see coming out is through the chimney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've done a cook. We went through all the stages of getting it started. Now, after you've closed everything off and it's completely cooled off, you go out there the next day. What's your process to clean it?
Okay. So this can depend on what you have, and this ties into some things we could talk about with upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just using everything stock, what you wind up having is the chamber inside has the loose charcoal. It's got all the charcoal dust, and everything is just kind of hanging out there. So you want to make sure you get all the ash off of that. So what you're left with is good, usable charcoal.
Mm-hmm.
So if it didn't come with it, a lot of times you could just get a cheap little hook type device that you just go in there and mix it up, right? So you're mixing it up, getting all the ash to fall through. It goes down to the bottom, and the same little door that you use to control your air intake is exactly where you get the ash out. And that's where that little hook tool comes in handy again. So you're actually going to put that into the slot. You're going to go under the lower grate. There's a little cavity in there for airflow. And that's really the risk. I will tell you, it depends on the length of the cook. But if I just did ribs, I might not be doing this the next day. As long as I look through there and I don't see that the air is blocked, it's usually okay to leave it. You want to make sure you're not inhibiting airflow at all. So I'll knock the ash off the lump every single time when I go to cook again, but I look through the little hole and I look down in the chamber and I go, it's got plenty of air. I don't need to clean this yet. So it may be two or three cooks before I go in there and actually use the hook tool. And I got a little metal bucket that I keep nearby. Wherever the Primo is, you want to ideally make it close to the edge. A lot of people make the mistake of installing these things in like a built-in situation and they push it back. And the problem is if you push it back, when you're dragging the ash out, where's it going to go?
Yeah.
So if you can't get a bucket or some kind of a little scoop under that opening that you could pull all that ash out onto, you're going to make a big mess. So that's usually the cleanup process. You hook it in there and you just kind of drag it out the hole. It gets a little bit messy. So sometimes if everything's completely cool, you get a shop vac and you kind of clean the area up a little bit. A little bit always escapes to the sides of the firebox. So you want to kind of clean that up as well. but that's it. That's the no-frills sort of way to do it. If you end up upgrading to something else called a kick ash basket, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know that Primo has one, but Big Green Egg probably got tired of third-party companies eating their lunch and decided to make something similar. So imagine your main cook chamber, the whole thing where you have that little cast iron grate that's at the bottom that holds the charcoal in place, That all gets replaced with a new system. This new system is a stainless steel dish that goes in the very bottom, and it's got a hole in it, so it still gets that same airflow from the front. You got this little dish in the bottom, and you've got a stainless steel basket that sits down in there. That basket is what holds your charcoal. So if you have a kick ash basket set up, all you really have to do is open it up. You pick the basket up and you go like that. You got to make that noise too.
Yeah.
Shake it around. That's going to knock all the ash off. The ash falls down into that little tray. You pick up the tray. You go to the garbage can. You dump it. Put the tray back. Put your basket back. You're ready to go. So that's one of the big selling points of the kick ash basket system that a lot of people really adore. I will tell you that I'm not a big fan of it. For one reason, I feel like when these companies design these products, they design them to work really well the way they're currently designed. If you switch from the setup that they have, and a lot of people go, oh, but it increases the airflow. It's so much more efficient. It gets hot so fast. Well, if I'm smoking, I don't necessarily want that. And correct, the way that this thing was designed to burn fuel at a particular temperature, especially if I want to go into the, you know, between 200 and 300 degrees, the restrictiveness of the stock equipment actually works better for me. And I find that with the kick ash basket, I have more of a chance of a runaway temperature situation than I do with the stock. So while the cleanup is way, way nicer with something like that, I personally don't like using it. And I stopped using mine for that reason and went back to the stock setup.
Yeah. So I don't have to just gut everything, use a shop vac, and then put everything back in.
Nope. You just need a little ash cleaning hook tool. If you don't have the Primo one, which is just, I believe it's just like a bent piece of metal.
Yeah, I just looked it up. Mm-hmm.
You can buy aftermarket ones. Big Green Egg has them. You just want one that's small enough to fit into that hole, has a little bit of a hook on the end, and you just drag that thing in there and then pull all the ash out. You could do just that, and you would be totally fine, because all you're really worried about is keeping that airflow going. Mm-hmm. Maybe in 6 months or something, if you know you're bored on a Saturday, go ahead, take it apart, get the shop back. It's nice to just kind of clean the whole thing out, but you never really have to. It's just you're going to end up with ash kind of kicked off to the side around the mm-hmm. thing, but like, I don't know, what's that doing? Is it really hurting anything out there? I don't think so.
No. Good to know then, because I think I've done it 3 times where I don't necessarily have to.
Mm-mm. Nope. It's just look at the airflow. And then even then, you're scooping it out. It's just a physical scoop. This stuff is heavy, man. So like the less you have to actually pull that crap out of that cook chamber, the better. Also keep in mind, whenever you do that, you take the weight out of this thing. That lid is heavy. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many posts I've seen in groups online where people did something like a cleaning. They put the lid up the firebox, the inner, I don't know the exact name. It's like the inner piece of ceramic. They took all that out. And now all the counterweight that was holding that thing down is gone, and boop, and it just falls down a patio. It's like, oh man. And that thing doesn't sustain falls very well.
Whoops.
So, the less you have to do that, the better.
Ooh, man.
Yeah, what a nightmare, right?
Yeah. I got it all the way here from like 5 states over, so.
Yeah.
We're not going to drop that thing.
No. Yeah, they are a beast to move. I did a build one time on the Wood Whisperer for a Big Green Egg, mm-hmm. and I didn't wind up keeping it, but I made a table for it. And you know how heavy these things are, mm-hmm. and I didn't have anyone to help me at the time. This might explain why I'm wearing a back brace right now, because I would do stupid things like this. But I actually found that I was able to lift up the double XL Big Green Egg by myself without the lid, and of course no internal parts. It's not that it's that heavy, just in terms of like pure muscle force. It's large, and there's mm-hmm. no good grips on it. So I actually just got a couple of ratchet straps, and I just needed a strap that I was able to send that through the vent hole at the bottom, wrap it around, and I was on the backside. And then when I had that leverage and having it like kind of push toward into my body, I was actually able to lift this thing up and drop it down into the table myself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are ways to do it, but it is always best if you got a friend to help you out. It's really not worth taking a chance.
Well, and that was the hardest part for me, because there's no latch for the lid, at least for the Primo. So it's not like I can grab the front handle and bear hug it and lift it that way, because it would just open and then fall and then make me say cuss words. And
It can be a nightmare. So let me ask you, do you have the original ceramic grates on there? So they're black?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they do generally come, at least when I bought them, the Primo, it comes with ceramic grates. You do have aftermarket options for that too. If you wanted to go with a stainless steel grate, you can certainly get those. Mm-hmm. I do have the stainless steel. I kind of prefer them. With the ceramic, you got to be a little bit more careful how you clean it, how aggressive you get with it, because you could certainly scratch and damage that ceramic coating. But the ceramic is fine. It worked well for me for ages, but I was doing a whole rehab. They had come out with a new hinge system. They came out with a new chimney cap. They came out with a bunch of new little things. And I was like, I want some of that new stuff. And I would like to not have to, you know, act like I'm at the gym every time I want to lift the lid.
Yeah.
So the spring assist lids are really, really nice. So I was able to kind of replace all of that at once, you know, put the new gasket in, and I got some new grates while I was there, and it just really spruced it up. It looks really nice.
Yeah. So I was actually going to say how much I really like those grates, the black mm-hmm. ones. They
nothing wrong with them,
at least so far. But that's good to know that. I mean, I don't want to damage them in any way.
Yeah, you do have to be a little bit more careful with how you clean them or scrape them. You just want to be a little bit more gentle. I mean, look it up. You'll find all kinds of recommendations. So, but it's not quite the same as like stainless steel, where we're going to go metal to metal and get all that crap off of there.
Yeah.
It's not the way to do it.
So I'm looking at their site right now, and one thing I wish I had was another level of mm-hmm. cook area, and it looks like I might be able to get something called the extension rack. Is that correct?
Yep. So that's what I alluded to in the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's basically a simple rack that's just got long legs on it. It's another, everything's half moon for the Oval XL.
Yep.
So you got that half moon shape and you drop that right on top of the main grates and you get yourself about, I don't know, maybe like 3.5 inches, 4 inches of additional space under that where you could slide things there. And then of course the cooking surface itself. So you almost, I think if you were able to use a combination of these things, you could almost double your square inch real estate to cook on. And then also you're getting a higher level. So if you're doing, you know, differential heat things and you want something that's a little bit cooler, mm-hmm. You might be able to do that for like direct grilling. Now, once you close the lid, I mean, it's pretty consistent throughout the dome as far as temperatures go. So I don't know that going vertical is going to do a whole lot for you unless you're over direct coals versus indirect, right?
Yeah.
So, but yes, I do. I don't use those as often as I would like, but I don't also don't cook that much food, right? So you definitely cook in quantities where having a little bit of vertical real estate would probably be real advantageous for you.
Yeah. And so when I first got it, there's two grates on there, obviously, mm-hmm. that come with it. So I took one off because I was doing the direct and then the dampening or baffle, what do they call it? Deflector plate.
Yeah.
On the other side. So I wanted both of my grates to be on the deflector side.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to close it, it wouldn't close all the way. So I'm assuming is that extension rack, is it a little bit smaller?
Yes.
So for that reason, okay.
Yeah. So it's got little feet on it, and if you put those feet into the wrong grate slots, you may wind up being a little further out. It looks okay, but then you go to close the lid and you realize the dome is hitting now. Mm-hmm. So that's how you know you're on the wrong one. So you kind of push it in a little bit and get it to the right spot. And then you go, okay, now I can close it. So yeah, they are like, I guess it's sort of the circumference or diameter of them is a little smaller so that it fits within that dome. And a dome on the XL is pretty good. I mean, it kind of goes up almost straight, but then fairly quickly kind of, you know, rounds off. So you do have to watch how high you go. You know, that's funny, man. I'm looking at the website. I don't know if maybe my perception of the size of things is not accurate. It feels optimistic when I look at the capacities here.
Mm-hmm.
8 whole chickens. Yeah. You've cooked on this thing and you've cooked some chicken on this thing. Do you see 8 whole chickens on there? I guess maybe if you like open the lid and it's nothing but chicken meat, like top to bottom. Yeah. You don't even see the grate anymore. It's all just wall-to-wall chickens. There's the name, a great episode name right there, by the way.
Wall-to-wall chickens.
But I don't know that I would imagine 8 whole chickens fitting on the XL. I could be wrong, but that seems a little bit maxed out.
If you're going like beer can style, that would still be pushing it. Because I had
Cornish hens, maybe?
Yeah, no kidding. I did 2 whole chickens and they were, I didn't spatchcock them, but I didn't have them vertical either. So they were just laying on the grates.
Yeah.
And 2 was probably, if I threw a third in there, they'd be touching, which I don't like to have my meat touch.
Well, when you're looking at 8 whole chickens, and even if they could fit, they would have to be so tight against each other, the interior parts of those chickens would never cook.
Yeah.
Like if you really want to cook these things, you need air around all of them. I mean, a little touching here and there, but like ultimately a little touching between chickens is not bad, but too much. No. And it's not good. So yeah, I don't know. That looks a little bit optimistic. Same thing with the burgers, 20 burgers. Like, I'm not sure. How do you flip the burgers? Like, I don't even know that you could, they'd have to be like little baby burgers, little McDonald's burgers, not my kind of burger. Anyway, not to disparage them. They wouldn't be the first company to overestimate, what you could put on there. But to be fair, I might say 3 chickens max.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a lot of chickens.
Yeah. That's, and I mean, for me coming from cooking in the quantities that I do, that's why it's always been hard to justify certain cookers because like even for my own family, if I'm doing it, there's mm-hmm. 5 of us, chances are I'm going to be cooking for the week as well. If I got it fired up, I'm going to do it. So, I mean, it's hard to justify a smaller cooker, even though it's fun and it produces really good results. So, I think with my experience so far with the Primo, I can probably get 1 to 2 nights worth of dinner for all 5 of us on there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Well,
yeah, especially if you do it in stages and stuff too.
Yeah.
One more thing I'll cover with you, unless you have more questions, we can do as many as you have. Have you heard of clean burns?
No, I was going to, I forgot to mention that. I don't know what a clean burn is.
So I touched on that earlier when we were talking about the gasket. It's one of the number one reasons people have to replace a gasket is doing a clean burn. So when you get this nice, beautiful, new ceramic doohickey in your backyard and you do a few cooks and you start to see the inside starts to turn black. One of the reasons why I like having a Primo, it's already black. So if the inside's black, who cares? But it goes from this beautiful, pristine, white, clean, you know, clay-looking surface to something that's covered in soot and grease, and over time it just looks black.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like you have the cleaning cycle on an oven, which, by the way, is also not great for your oven. So there's that. It is equally not great for the cooker. People swear by it. People do it. I have never done one. Now, I will sometimes at the end of a cook, if I think it was maybe a little bit messy, something that was a little bit greasy, and I do want to kind of encourage some of that stuff to crisp up and burn off, I will let it go, right? And I'll let the temperature ramp up. It might get up to like 500 degrees, and then I run out of charcoal, and then it's done. That's sacrificing whatever was left.
Yeah.
But getting the temp to go as high as possible, then the next day I can kind of scrape the grates. There are folks who really like to maybe, I don't know, once a year, do a clean burn. And that's literally loading it up with charcoal and letting this thing go like hotter than the blazes of hell, like ridiculous amounts of heat, to the point that when it's done, it is pristine and white on the inside. All the soot is gone. And they love the way that looks. It just looks clean. It's brand new, ready to go. But it wreaks havoc on the parts of this thing.
No kidding.
People have had cracked fireboxes as a result, and then they're calling, you know, Big Green Egg or whoever to get a warranty claim because they went up to 900 degrees for an hour, you know. And of course, the gasket. The gasket is one of the first things to be sacrificed in a situation like that. It's totally unnecessary. This is like your smoker. How often do you take a flamethrower to the inside of your smoker, you know, for an hour to completely burn off every trace of anything that's on the inside? Bottom line is, if it's not falling into your food and it is not a health and safety hazard, leave it alone. It's not doing anything. So the most I do to clean the interior of mine, and this is like a once a season thing, I might get a stiff wire brush and I'll go to the inside and just kind of scrape it. It might even be like a nylon brush, you know, just plastic handled nylon brush. Yeah. And just scrape anything that's loose off the top, vacuum it, clean the inside the same way. And that's it. There's absolutely no reason to do a clean burn. I think the only time I would do that, and it still wouldn't be that blazing hot temp. Sometimes with these things, you can get mold, right? Depending on where you live, if it's really humid, always good to keep it cracked. So don't completely seal this thing up. Especially if you put a cover on it, that encourages moisture to stay in there. You just want some airflow. You want an opportunity for the air to get through it and to allow it to dry. If not, you could end up with mold. And if you have mold, there's one of the times I would probably fire it up and I'd let that thing roll 400 or 500 degrees for a couple of hours to just kind of disinfect it. But I still would not be doing the clean burn level, which is just dangerously hot.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's about clean burns. People... I'm sure people listening to this disagree with me. That's totally fine. But I have never seen any reason to do them. I just think they're silly and a waste of fuel and might actually just wind up costing you more money by damaging things. So it's just, I don't think it makes any sense to do it.
Well, it's good to know about the mold.
So
after I close everything off, let it filter out for the night, next morning before I go to work or whatever, open the bottom, open the top.
Yeah, and crack the bottom, crack the top.
Let it get some airflow.
Let it get some fresh air. I think this is something where at the frequency, you probably are going to use it. It's not a problem. That's one of the most common things when someone goes, help, I've got mold. What do I do? And then the commenters on Facebook are like, you should probably cook more often. It's like, listen, a-hole, if I could cook more often, I would. I've, by the way, never had this happen, thankfully. but now that I live in a humid area, and if I'm not, you know, I've got other ways to cook. I'm not always cooking. There's a good chance I may end up with mold inside there. So that's one of the things, if you can, It's nice to keep a cover on these things, but ultimately they don't need a cover. That ceramic is going to last a very long time out in the elements. So even if you go uncovered, especially if you're using it every few days or something, if you keep it uncovered, just keep that bottom cracked, keep the top cracked. As long as there's airflow going through there, that will discourage. Can't say it's going to completely prevent it, but would certainly discourage growth inside there. And frequency of use is definitely the best medicine here, preventative. As long as you're using it pretty frequently and then still allowing some airflow, I don't think you're going to have a problem at all. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I have any other questions other than, do you think the Kamado style cooker is the top or the superior way of cooking?
In many ways, yes. I think every person is entitled to have their favorites and they'll be perfectly correct in that. This is all opinion. But at the same time, I really like my offset. So if I want traditional barbecue, it's hard to beat, you know, splits of wood to get the flavor that you want. But there is something special about Kamado cooking things like chicken thighs, pork, things, you know, so it does the smoking jobs, but it's also a damn good grill, you know, for higher temperature grilling. The thing is like a very moist oven. I know people who bake desserts inside these things, but you know how it is with the pellet smokers too. We do the same thing with those because it's so easy to control that temperature.
Correct.
So it is definitely going to be one of my absolute favorites. I have, you know, the pellet smoker is still one of my favorite cooking devices because of the convenience it affords me. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, so if I'm doing my, I can't even say, I would say it's maybe 50%. If I have enough time, I want that offset. I want my Lone Star grills out there. I want to be feeding it with a whole bunch of wood and I want to make a day of it. Mm-hmm. And the barbecue is going to taste great. But what it isn't going to taste like is charcoal barbecue, which has a different flavor.
Yep.
So this is almost like, I like chocolate and vanilla. It just depends on which flavor I'm in the mood for that day.
Yeah.
So I do think it's great, but its versatility, I think, is where it's really hard to beat, right? You can't do the same things in that. Sorry, can't do the same things in an offset that you can do with a Kamado. So I think for the backyard cook who's just cooking for a family and may be doing dessert one day, steaks another day, and then smoking a brisket the next day, it's going to be hard to beat that.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point of like the grilling part. A lot of these pellet smoker companies say that they can.
Yeah.
And I know like Pit Boss has like a little great vent thing that you can open and you get some open flames and, but come on now.
It's not the same.
That's nowhere near the amount of heat and an actual direct heat source like you're getting for a regular grill or even the Kamado style.
And a lot of people on the pellet smokers will get the grill grates, like the add-on aluminum grates that you put on just to get those grill marks. And sure, it's a multifunctional tool that does a whole bunch of other things. And if you can get it to do that and you're happy with it, great.
Yep.
But you're absolutely lying to yourself if you think that's the same as a true like 600-700 degree sear over direct charcoal. It's not the same thing. It's just getting as close as you can. So just flavor profile, moisture, fun of use, efficiency.
Right there.
It's really tough to beat.
Yeah.
It's, you know, but again, everybody's different and everybody's needs are a little bit different. So for me personally, I would say it's a real tough one. It's why as goofy as I've been with my grill and smoker purchases, I bought a lot of things. Why? Just because I wanted to try it. I was curious. And if it didn't work out, I sold it. I lost a few bucks on it, but I also had a really good experience. What's the one thing I still have? Mm-hmm. Is the Primo.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not going anywhere.
And that's one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to have this conversation with you and record it. Just, I can see myself using this for a long time. It's so fun to use. I mean, I'm a huge offset guy. Everybody knows that. I have two pellet smokers now and absolutely love those. They have their own purpose, but I find myself wanting to use this Primo more and more for that reason. It's just fun.
Yeah,
and the results are awesome.
It's a one-way ticket to Flavor Town, my friend.
Oh,
and,
yes. Hello.
Like the other day when I got the Auger Jam, there was a part of me that was like, oh, shucks. I have no choice. I've got to use the Primo because I know doing the thing with the St. Louis-style pork steaks is charring that barbecue sauce. And I know for a fact that after 45 minutes of flipping, adding sauce, it is going to taste better on that charcoal than it is on my pellet, my pellet grill. It would taste fine on the pellet grill. It would not taste as good as the stuff directly over that charcoal.
Yep. Just something about those black little pebbles, I tell you.
It is, man. It's good stuff. Mm-hmm. Hard to beat. Same thing with burgers. Simple burgers.
Yep.
You know, if... some people don't like it too. Like Nicole, she would like a little less of that sort of intense charcoal flavor. I love it, mm-hmm. right? But and that's why sometimes I might have more than one thing going, because I might have her burger on something and my burger on something else.
Yep.
But I love that charcoal flavor. And this goes back to the same thing to credit the kettle, right? That's one of the things that the kettle is going to do for you. That's fantastic. As simple as that and as cheap as that device is, it's still going to produce amazing tasting food on it, because you've got that direct flame charcoal action going on.
Yeah. Oh, this past weekend I had a decent sized cook. One of the meats was pork belly. So I had both pellet smokers going, and then I got the Primo rip roaring to do some chicken. I'm like, you know what? I've got a little bit extra of this pork belly that I kind of had to use to shape it and whatnot. So it was a nice little square. I'm like, I'm going to throw it on here just to see. Oh, goodness sakes.
Yeah.
It
good, huh?
I mean, it's the way I described it was, if you've never had pork belly before, a good pork belly piece is you pop it in your mouth and it's like a giant pimple explodes and just everywhere. I mean, it's just, it's the meat version of a gusher.
Yeah. That's maybe not the most appetizing way to describe it, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. Well, and until people...
It's like a giant pimple in your mouth. You're going to love it.
Yes. Dr. Pimple Popper would.
God, that's so gross. All right.
Yes. All right. Well, that was a really good episode. I learned a lot. I'm going to have to listen to it a couple more times just so I can soak it all in. But
sure. And let me just state clearly, there's a lot of people out there who know way more about Kamado smoking and grilling than I do. This is just my advice from my own experience, almost like you're asking your buddy next door, your neighbor who has one, you're getting tips and advice from him. Don't take everything, take everything I said with a grain of salt. It's my opinions from my experience, but there's plenty of information out there. If you need more or clarification on anything we've talked about, you might find other resources that have more information. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And if you have a different way of doing something than what we talked about tonight, let us know that way. We love to learn as well.
I certainly do not know everything. I mean, I could probably do this for the rest of my life and still not know everything about cooking on a Primo.
Yeah. So, I think that wraps it up. And we will talk with you on the next episode.
All right. Sounds good. See ya.
Bye.